morning, and thanks for tuning in KSLM this fine day here on 104.3 FM and 1220 AM as we now present Good Morning Salem with Stacy Ann.
Good morning to you. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I'm Stacy Ann. Glad to be hanging out with you on this Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. Are you cooking at your house or are you going somewhere else? What's your favorite part of Thanksgiving? Are you big into the cranberry sauce or perhaps you like the pumpkin pie like I do? I saw a really funny picture on social media of a dessert at Thanksgiving and it was like this whole plate of Cool Whip and like a bite of pumpkin pie. And I went, oh, that would be me. I love pumpkin pie, but I like the Cool Whip as well. And it's fun. The fun part about Thanksgiving is all the desserts and all the stuffing and, oh, you got to have outstanding gravy. And by the way, shout out to John Corser, who makes the best gravy. We had an opportunity to spend Thanksgiving last night. I had a little dinner with our friends, John and Amy, and he made some really great gravy. And it was fun to watch them work as a team putting the dinner together. And we just enjoyed our time. And I don't know where you're at today, but I encourage you to come on out today at noon at the Capitol. We're going to have a big Thanksgiving feast, a community-wide Thanksgiving feast. And it's on the Capitol grounds there. And so it's a little bit of a protest, a little bit of a Thanksgiving gathering. And so it'll be eventful. Certainly the rain will show up. I'm certain of it because the forecast has the rain continuing throughout today. Sunny, partly sunny tomorrow. And temperature will be about 50 degrees. So you want to bundle up as well. But we got a big tent and there'll be some speakers and it'll be a great time of fun and fellowship. So I'm looking forward to seeing you there at noon tomorrow. And tomorrow is, you're going to do whatever you want to do, but this is today. And I'm excited to see you and maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow and get you to call in during our special Thanksgiving show tomorrow that Terry and I are going to do tomorrow for you. In the studio now, I have Lisa, and we're continuing on from last hour. Lisa has a compelling story. She is an Oregonian, and she had an opportunity to travel the world and get further her education. And Lisa, I'm so impressed with how timing works. You are here at a particular time in history. Oregon needs you.
Thank
Oregon
you.
Needs your perspective, your legal analysis. Oregon needs your insight and your connections to help rebuild the canyon. And who would have thought, you know, a little girl raised in the Oregon way, right, would be sent away to come back and help. And in a sense, we're kindred spirits, as we talked about that, because I, too, was raised here in Oregon and lived elsewhere. And now I'm back, too, doing my thing and doing my part. So we celebrate that together this morning. Now, you talked about getting trained and becoming an attorney. Talk to us a little bit more about your journey.
I would do so with pleasure. Thank you. I finished up at the University of Oregon, and just before the end of my last semester there, I was invited to be part of a welcoming committee for a distinguished guest lecturer. This was arranged through the Russian department, and because I spoke Russian and had just come back from the University of Leningrad, I was invited to be part of a small group going to the Eugene Airport to meet a guest lecturer named Valery Chalidze. He was born and raised in the Soviet Union in Moscow. He was a theoretical physicist. He was Georgian by nationality, but born and raised in Moscow. I did not want to go to the airport. I was busy. I had other things to do, but I said, well, okay, I will do this. So we got to the airport. We got there late. The plane had already disembarked. The gate area was empty. No one knew what the guest lecturer looked like. This was back in 1980. I was a little annoyed, so I started walking through the airport just to cool down. I got that feeling that one sometimes gets, that somebody is watching. So I stopped. I looked over my shoulder. I saw this handsome man making a phone call. I kept on walking, rejoined my group. They had found the guest lecturer, who was the man who had been making the phone call.
Oh, wow.
We were introduced, and the first words he said to me were, "Oh, it's you." A week later, I moved to New York, And we were married for 37 years.
Fantastic.
He was, he had been exiled from the Soviet Union to the West because even though he was working as the head of a physics laboratory, he felt a moral compulsion to try and help his country make a transition from a dictatorship to a democracy. So he, while he was working as a physicist, he spent a couple of years teaching himself Soviet and international law as they pertain to human rights. He then established the Moscow Human Rights Committee with two other scientists, one Andrei Tverdokhlebov and one Andrei Sakharov, who is one of the few double Nobel Prize winners in history. Sakharov won the Nobel Prize for Physics because he created the hydrogen bomb. He then spent the rest of his life trying to persuade the world not to use it.
Mm.
And, of course, got in touch with the Soviet authorities. So the three of them established the Moscow Human Rights Committee to provide free legal advice, both to individuals whose rights had been violated by the dictatorship and also to the Soviet government itself. My husband emerged as the leading strategist for what came to be known as the legalist branch of the human rights movement. As a result of that, he was exiled to the West. His Soviet citizenship was taken away.
Hmm.
He was a man without a country for 5 years, and then he became a U.S. citizen.
Incredible.
So we did a lot of work together over the years, but when I moved to New York, I then went to law school there at New York Law School. As soon as I finished law school, we moved to Vermont, and that's where I've lived ever since.
That's such a beautiful area, the Vermont area. We've worked in New Hampshire and been in that area. So in your fall colors are just epic, aren't they?
Spectacular, yes, absolutely.
And there seems to be, when we've gone in New Hampshire and in the Vermont, that area is similar in a sense to Oregon.
Although the mountains are tall here.
They're tall here. You can see the peaks here.
Yes. The Adirondack Mountains are so old that mm-hmm. they've worn down and they look like foothills.
Incredible. And then the coastline when you get over to Maine and,
oh, yes.
and the coastline is all rugged, just like Oregon coast. You know, it's like there's a mountain and then there's the ocean, you know. And it reminded me when I was there and it made me homesick for Oregon. and so then you've been there. And how many times would you journey back then to Oregon? From Vermont?
I tried to come at least once a year, sometimes twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very close to my sisters and the rest of my family. Vermont is a wonderful place to live, like Oregon. I currently am a research fellow at the Peace and War Center in a military academy, of all things, in Vermont.
Incredible.
Norwich University, which is 200 years old.
Mm.
And my particular area of focus, as I mentioned earlier, was this tension between dictatorship and democracy and how we can effectuate social change to lean more toward democracy and rule of law, which in my opinion is one of the greatest achievements of civilization.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And no further comment needed on that. That's exactly right. So you come back once a year. You have family here. It's six generations along the canyon. Were you in the area when the fires hit, or what did you know of any threat of fire? What was the family sharing with you when this developed?
Well, that was a very scary time, and I was 3,000 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try not to cry as I answer this question.
You have permission.
but my sister Debbie lives in Portland, so I wasn't too terribly worried about her directly. But my sister Melody lives in Niagara still with other members of our family. My aunt Dolores lives in Mill City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a lot of people that we know and love. Melody had a hard time getting out.
Mm.
There was no warning.
Mm-hmm.
We were all very fortunate that her son, my nephew Nick, knocked on her door in the middle of the night
mm-hmm.
and said, "We need to leave." She actually had to cut fallen trees out of the road to get out. Fortunately, she had a chainsaw. And I know of at least one other family from Detroit, and I think perhaps two others, who were able to get out because she had cut those logs out of the road, the burning trees mm-hmm. that had fallen. So I got a call from my sister Debbie, I think at around 3 in the morning, Vermont time, so mm-hmm. about midnight here, saying that Melody had just made it to Gates from Niagara. And when we put together a timeline later, it appeared that there were about 5 minutes to spare.
Oh, wow. Real life up close. Incredible. And so they made it to Gates, and then the fire continued to consume down the canyon.
Yes, and so they made it to the valley, the Willamette Valley. I don't know what time, actually, but they were, I may be getting some of these details wrong, but they were able to get a motel room somewhat quickly. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they spent the first night that or two. That might have been in the car somewhere, but
kind of a blur, probably,
sure.
And I know a lot of people, the owners of this radio station, they got a knock on the door in the middle of the night. You better evacuate. And I remember earlier in that day, on that Monday, Labor Day, I was in the at Silver Falls with my daughter and her boyfriend hiking. And I remember we went in early and we're down around the water. Falls, and as the day progressed and we started heading back, we could see ash falling from the sky, and I'm like, mm-hmm. What is going on? Mm-hmm. And we knew that there were forest fires, had no idea, but the wind had picked up, mm-hmm. and that was just a mix that we weren't predicting, really, and it was difficult. And as we got to the car, it was already starting to get a film, and as we were driving back to Salem, there were branches in the road, and I'm thinking, if I was on my motorcycle, this would be very hazardous, you know, mm-hmm. just driving on the roads. Mm-hmm. And so as the day progressed into the evening, now you're talking about the evacuation going on and stories of people surviving by being in the middle of the water. You know, just compelling stories. And I'm sure you've heard even more so of these stories. So they get out, and when they went back in, they saw what had happened. Talk to me a little bit about the devastation of the loss.
Well, that's certainly the reason that we put together the Canyon Rising Lollapalooza, and for anyone interested in either volunteering or requesting help, there is no shame in asking for help.
Yes.
I want to emphasize that. We all need help. You can check out the event page on Facebook, Canyon Rising Lollapalooza, and get some details there. There are a couple super simple forms to fill out. One if you want to be a volunteer, one if you want to ask for help. It's literally like a half-page form. All we need is your address, some contact info. You know, it would take 2 minutes to fill that out.
And we'll put links up on our Facebook page and certainly on this show plan as we do the podcast, and we encourage people to share. And I want to reemphasize as we go to break here, there is no shame in asking for help. If you know somebody that's been affected by the fires, you know, FEMA has help, there's community help, there's all kinds of resources. I know a lot of the pastors are stepping up in the area. We're going to talk more about that as we get back from this break. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I'm Stacey Ann, hanging out with Lisa today. We'll be back after this.
Good morning.
It's a good morning. Wake up to a brand new day. This morning. Stepping on my way.
Good morning to you. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Together on this Wednesday, it's 43 degrees. 8:22 in the morning. I'm Stacey Ann, and I want to say thanks to Dave and Paige Smith, Realty One Group here in Willamette Valley. They're ready to go above and beyond to serve you and your real estate needs. Give them a call, 503-939-7099. And I've got in the studio with me, we're having a great discussion last hour and this hour, and time goes so fast, Lisa. We're talking about what had happened in the canyon and the fire and what kind of the events that led to the escape by 5 minutes from the homestead in the area where you'd been settled all these years, six generations of family history, and the flames just comes devastate through that area. My understanding is even the school, it came down and it damaged the school at Gates. I don't know if it's completely gone, but I know it's damaged. And I know initially there was a fire command center set up there, and I think that was even affected. So many stories that are popping up and people recovering, because trauma is always difficult and leaves a memory. And for me personally, I've had a fire growing up as a kid, as a teenager, and I know how that's left an impression and how I'm hypersensitive to smoke and fire, and because of living through that, I'm certain there's several people that have been affected that need some continued encouragement and support. What are you hearing about families impacted by fires in the canyon? Where are they living? What's going on? What do you know?
Fortunately, a big chunk of Mill City was not destroyed. Mainly it was the Marion County side that was hit, but the Linn County side is much better off. Idana, happily, was spared.
Who knew?
Can't figure that one out, but thank heaven for it. So at least in my family, some people are finding rental housing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are living in RVs. That's one of the things that concerns us with winter coming up.
Mm-hmm.
A few people I've heard of, their houses were burnt, but a shed may have survived on the property. So they're living in essentially an unheated small structure. I came out here from Vermont yesterday with very few clothes of my own to wear, because I brought huge suitcases full of blankets and mittens and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So those are going to be our high priority. Everybody's a high priority,
sure.
But we're looking at those folks,
mm-hmm.
And wanting to help them. So it's certainly very much an early recovery period. I would encourage people also to ask for help, not only from us and other sources that mm-hmm. are available, but also I hope people will not be embarrassed about perhaps getting some grief counseling.
Yes.
We all need that from mm-hmm. time to time. Trauma is real. It's manifested in physiological ways in
mm-hmm.
our body.
Mm-hmm.
And there are real science-based, good, reliable techniques to help people work through this massive, massive grief and loss. So I would encourage people to do that. I do speak from experience myself. I mentioned to you how I met my husband.
Yes.
We were married for 37 years, and then on January 3rd, 2018, he was working on theoretical physics, as he usually did. He helped advance the understanding of the role of mass and electric charge in the vortex theory of matter.
Mm.
And so he went to bed about an hour earlier than I did, which was common. I went to bed about an hour later. I got in bed. He coughed twice. I said, "Are you okay?" He didn't answer. So I put my arms around him. He coughed twice more, and he was dead.
Wow.
So I am not unfamiliar with grief.
Mm.
And I know that it's a massive thing to work your way through. And there is absolutely no shame in getting professional help to do that. It's as physical as a heart attack. It's as physical as diabetes or cancer or anything else people might have to work through. So I would strongly encourage people to do that.
And again, I put the underlying agreement on this, because I have watched people, especially with loss, tremendous loss, personally in a relationship, but also in your home and all of your life. Life as you knew it changed drastically that
uh-huh.
day.
Yes.
And that's the case. And as the situation might be a little different, but the reaction physically is the same. And I do agree, it's important that you work that out, that you talk that out, you walk that out with somebody that you trust, a professional, maybe you have a relationship with a pastor or a mentor of some kind, but it is important that you don't bottle that up, because it will manifest in other ways. That's a great reminder today. And certainly interesting things that we walk through in our day-to-day lives. And but we can use it to help others, right?
I certainly hope so. That's my goal. I also try and use my legal education to help people. I did close my practice recently, and now I'm an academic rather than a practicing lawyer. But I did practice for 34 years. And I wanted to speak a little bit about some legal history that I think is relevant to what the canyon is dealing with now, if that's
mm-hmm.
all right.
Well, and we we've got about a minute left of this break. We can go into it after if you want to a little bit. But I do, let's give the Facebook page name again of how people can stay connected.
Okay, that's Canyon Rising Lollapalooza. And that is a Facebook event page. On Facebook, I'm lisa.barnhart.5, and you're welcome to message me or friend me as well. And I'm posting a lot of related things there. One other thing I will mention before the break. This evening, we have the wonderfully talented Tom Grant, who's an extremely well-known jazz pianist in Portland, doing a virtual benefit concert for us.
Fantastic.
Yes. So if you go to the Tom Grant website or Facebook page, or just Google Tom Grant, jazz musician, Portland, Oregon, you will get that information as well. It is free to enjoy the concert, but he is using it as a vehicle to solicit donations for our effort.
I absolutely love that. And we'll get the link and put that as well on our Facebook page and up on our website, because we are better together. We really are. And that is something that's been on my heart, is how do we get resources to the people in the canyon at this particular time, not only to help them through this difficult time, but how we rebuild. And when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about kind of the legal foundation needed to move forward with the rebuild of the canyon. And how do we keep people here? How do we keep people interested in rebuilding their lives here in Oregon? You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I'm Stacey Ann, hanging out with Lisa. We're having a wonderful morning. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back after this. Good morning, friends. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I'm Stacey Ann. Reminding you today that at noon, there's going to be a great gathering of community members for Thanksgiving meal at the Capitol here in Salem. We'd love to have you join us, and certainly it'll be a celebrating time, but also a time to say, hey, you know, this lockdown, not so much fun during Thanksgiving. And certainly there are things that are happening in our state, in our nation, that we want to continue to be informed, in tune, stay connected. And I encourage you to like us on Facebook, KSLM Radio, and on our website, kslm.news. We currently have local news, national news, and certainly all of our syndicated hosts, it posts their podcasts up there, so you have a chance to go and listen not only to our local shows, but also our national shows. And I encourage you to stay connected and share with your friends and family how they can stay connected as well. Well, talking about local things happening in the community, we've got a fun opportunity for you and I to join up with our friends in the canyon to help with a rebuild. And we talked about this a little bit, Lisa. I have her in the studio with me today. We talked a little bit about what has happened in the devastation of the fire. And now as we talk about rebuild, certainly keeping people here, you had mentioned a statistic. Usually when there's something like this, it happens. What was that number again of people that will tend to leave?
Typically, after a natural disaster, one-third of the community chooses not to rebuild, and we are not content to lose a third of our community.
And the communities in the canyon, some of them are touristy, second homes, things like that, but there's a whole heart of people that this is their livelihood. They live there. They're in the timber industry, a lot of different, farming and a Christmas tree, a lot of different types of family enterprises going on in the canyon. What else am I missing in the canyon that happens?
Oh, I'm sure there are a number of businesses who have been hard hit by this. The canyon really is a unique community. I would just take a quick historical look at that, if you don't mind.
Go for it. Yeah.
Thank you. So one of the human rights is actually property rights. This is embedded in our Constitution in both the 5th and the 14th Amendment Due Process Clause. No one shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without just compensation. That is a limitation on the power of the government to interfere with private property. I talked a little bit earlier about the Federalist versus Anti-Federalist debate. So those words actually are very powerful words, and they had a lot of impact. For about 120 years or so after we ratified the Constitution. Unfortunately, from my perspective, round about the 1920s, our constitutional jurisprudence took a pretty sharp turn away from that in the form of land use laws, zoning, and so forth. When zoning first started developing in the 1920s, the Ambler Realty case came to the U.S. Supreme Court. It's a major stepping stone sort of case, because that was the case in which, again, this is my opinion as a scholar, the U.S. Supreme Court turned its back on the property protection portion of the U.S. Constitution. I consider that a very unfortunate development, and unfortunately, that deviation expanded very greatly and very rapidly throughout the 20th century, to the point where now land use regulations are very restrictive. They are imposed for public purpose, and yet no just compensation is offered. This is something that came to haunt the San Ym Canyon very greatly in the 1970s, particularly with the passage of the Endangered Species Act. There was a terrible, bitter battle at that time as well in the 70s and 80s between the environmental movement on the one hand and logging and other industries on the other. The tragic irony of that battle is that it was unnecessary. People who live in the canyon, who grow there, who depend on the forests for their livelihoods, actually love nature.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to look long and hard and far to find people who care about nature enough to live in it 24/7 their whole lives, to raise their families there, to do without the conveniences that people have in town, to face the dangers that people in town do not have to face. So there was really a huge area for common ground, for cooperation between the environmental movement and the logging industry. That common ground was not found, and I do not fault the logging industry for that. They tried. Mm-hmm. They actually care about healthy forests. It's in their own best interest to do so, both financially and emotionally. So as we entered into the 90s and then the 2000s, the canyon had already taken a huge beating economically because essentially logging had been closed down, not 100%, but to an enormous extent. And so we were hurting economically even then. It is kind of a sore point in the canyon that policies, regulations are sort of dictated to the canyon. In a sense, one could argue that that is a form of tyranny of the majority.
Right.
And I relate that back to the early 1920s constitutional jurisprudence, when we kind of just turned a blind eye to that word property in the Due Process Clause of the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments. That is a correction that I think needs to occur, and that needs to occur through a combination of the courts, individuals bringing suits, attorneys educating themselves on constitutional history and application, and also through education. That's very important. To me, we need to all have our constitutional hats on all the time. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance.
Yes.
I feel as though we have not done a terribly good job for a few generations now transmitting our democratic culture to the next generation. We need to fix that.
I agree, and there's a movement going on, you know, may or may not be aware of this, of training and doing some training locally of the Constitution, not just students, those that are growing up and going to school, but also for some of us adults who might have maybe skipped that class or didn't go to it. So I'm excited to connect you up with some of the others that are in this movement to put these training classes together. And I know there's some free online training, and you can get your constitution online for free, and we've talked about that before, but I love to hear about this. Now, when we talk about this law affecting the canyon and some of this eminent domain stuff and needing to pay back for the property that's been taken, what's going to happen? What do you see? What do they need to do in the canyon to protect property rights as we move forward? What do you think?
Unfortunately, it's not even really an eminent domain issue. That's when the government does it right,
mm-hmm.
and does a taking of private property for public use and pays just compensation.
Mm-hmm.
That is not really the issue we're dealing with in the canyon, because that doesn't happen very much.
Mm.
What happens is very heavy restrictions that reduce the value of a property. It may be for a public purpose. One could argue that certainly protecting the environment is a noble public purpose. But if it's a public purpose, the public should pay for it. We mm-hmm. should not shift that cost to individual businesses or individual landowners. That should come from general taxes, which makes it harder to do, because that makes the legislators perhaps less popular.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, we improve the functioning of our separation of powers and the Bill of Rights as they were originally envisioned. So that certainly is a correction that needs to be made. In terms of rebuilding the canyon right now, this legacy, this history that I'm talking about is very relevant and adverse,
mm-hmm.
because one major component and cost of the rebuilding effort will be complying with septic regs, with mm-hmm. a zillion other regs, and that costs money. It's an expensive venture. As a society, we have allowed the burden of that to be shifted on individual landowners and homeowners and business owners. The canyon is not a wealthy place.
Mm.
So one thing we're trying to do is work with both Linn County and Marion County, and greatly to their credit, kudos to them for this, they have set up temporary offices in trailers in Gates on the premises of the Gates Church.
Good.
And so what I'm hearing, I haven't met with them yet, but what I'm hearing is they are being responsive and trying to somehow factor in the current crisis
mm-hmm.
into this very restrictive regulatory scheme, particularly in Marion County. It's very burdensome. So I'm hopeful that we will have, I'm not quite sure how to describe it, but maybe the best word is understanding and actual help on that front. Also, I would love to get some donations from manufacturers of septic tanks. I would love it if somebody could pull together a donation or two of tiny houses, prefab homes,
mm-hmm.
Whatever. We are working with the Gates Community Church, which is a 501 corporation, mm-hmm. so these would all be tax deductible. It would be great advertising for the manufacturers who choose to give one or more either tiny houses or prefab homes. We could set it up as a raffle or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
But we really, a big part of the rebuilding challenge is the regulatory environment.
Well, and I'm hoping by having FEMA on last week and talking about housing options and moving in their temporary trailers and things too, that they see some of the regulation. My understanding is they've been working with county and some of the, you know, the hoops that they have to jump through, you know, to get people into good solid housing. My kudos to Marion County and Linn County and their representation. I know, friends, we don't live in the canyon, but we live in Marion County, majority of us, and or maybe Linn County. We can come alongside of our friends, show up to these county meetings and tell them, hey, we need to get some help in the canyon, not only money-wise, but also policy-wise as we move forward. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. We'll be back after this.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Thank you for tuning in on this Wednesday. It's 8:50 in the morning. Currently here at the KSLM studio, 42 degrees. We're going to see rainy sky throughout today, and tomorrow the sun will be picking out of the clouds. That'll be fun. And I want to encourage you to come out and celebrate with us today at the Capitol at noon, having a Thanksgiving feast. I think our tent covers up to 500 people. It'll be interesting to see who shows up today, and I know it'll be a grand time of celebrating and giving thanks and certainly standing strong as we the people saying, you know, we're going to defy this lockdown that's going on right now. We do need one another. We're stronger together. And certainly, we've been through so much in this particular area, the Willamette Valley, the San Yam Canyon. There's so much devastation. Our whole lives have been upended. And up until the fire took place in September, we were all told, you know, to isolate, stay away from one another, you know, do our part to flatten the curve. And what I see in this community, and I've been back now since January, I see a lot of people who really want to help one another. They really want to do it the Oregon way and take care of one another. And the outpouring of support when the fire happened, and being here at the radio station, we broaden our broadcast. We had people on saying, this is what's going on. We had the Honky Tonk Bar and Grill is a kind of a local spot that was collecting food and water and things for the firefighters on the front lines. It was such an amazing, emotional time. And Lisa, you're in the studio with me today. You have six generations of family that have lived along the canyon, lots of connections, lots of memories. You've gone to school up there. A lot of history in that area, and you are coming back to experience it for the very first time.
Indeed, I am girding my loins, so to speak, because I expect it will be a kick in the gut. Nothing for me compared to the people who still live here, of course, and my heart just goes out to them. At the same time, however, it has been a phenomenal feeling and experience to see this tidal wave of support and essentially loving each other.
Mm-hmm.
Neighbors helping neighbors, strangers helping strangers. I have a couple shout outs I would like to,
sure,
to make. One, the Wolverine Mess Hall, organized by Butch Drake, who also graduated from San Yam High School. They have done just a fabulous job of feeding people. Sean Drake, his brother,
mm-hmm,
who is organizing our Canyon Tool Lending Library. We're pretty excited about that. That will be located on the premises of the Gates Community Church. We already have a metal storage container, a 40-foot container, thanks to the kind donation of yet another person.
Mm-hmm.
And we will have the Tool Lending Library up and running by Thanksgiving, so people who need to borrow tools can check them out.
Mm-hmm.
We will sanitize in between. We are sensitive to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sensitive to the legal and liberty issues, but also to the health issues.
That's true. Yep.
It is a significant health issue. We will be compliant with, mm-hmm, the mandates, while at the same time I reserve my right to challenge the constitutionality of the mandates.
Exactly.
But we don't want people getting sick. Also, the Gates Community Church and also the church in Mahema. I apologize to Pastor Troy. I don't remember the full name of the Mahema,
mm-hmm,
church, but both of those churches have been unbelievable, just phenomenal. I'm sure other churches have as well. Those are the ones that I happen to have worked with, the Knights of Columbus, the Lions Club, just, you know, the list goes on, and so many individuals, hundreds, perhaps thousands of individuals have come forward in one way or another. One thing that has fascinated me is that people look at their own skill sets, their own personalities, their own lives, and figure out what it is that they have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a quilter. Well, she can make quilts for people.
Right.
And another woman popped up. She's good at salvaging burnt or rusted metal. So if you've lost skillets or, mm-hmm, whatever it may be, you know, nurses, just the whole gamut, electricians, any skill or no skill at all, you know, some people have said, well, I don't really have a skill, but I have strong shoulders.
Right.
So it's just been really a phenomenal learning experience to see how people sort themselves out in this spontaneous outpouring of assistance.
Kind of reminds me, as a kid, I loved to watch the show Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, yes.
And how they worked as a community, and they all brought their, in that film and on and that show that we watched every week. And it kind of reminds me of that. It'll be interesting to hear stories of where people were prior to the fire, you know, because we get so consumed in our day-to-day life, mm-hmm. just living, making a living, mm-hmm. our families and whatever, mm-hmm. how connected it was compared mm-hmm. to how connected they are now. And it's the silver lining, I think, sometimes the good that comes out of these devastating areas and times in our life, that we say, wow, because we went through that, we have deeper relationship, we value our community so much more. And I've witnessed that from, and as an outsider here in Salem, to what I'm hearing of what's going on in the canyon, and I'm excited for you to experience that as you get reacquainted with friends and family members, right, as you go up there today.
Yes, thank you for that. I'm looking forward to it in a strange way, mm-hmm. while dreading it at the
yes.
same time.
Yes.
But the canyon was always very tight, always very tight.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is, I think, important at this time that we stop being the divided states of America.
Mm.
We stop viewing people with whom we disagree as enemies.
Exactly.
I know for a fact that many of the volunteers who have reached out to me would disagree with me greatly on many issues. That doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, we need help, and I'll
yes.
take help from any quarter. But what I really want to emphasize is that reasonable minds can differ.
Yes.
That makes us richer. That doesn't make us poorer. So first of all, I would say to folks, I don't think there's any need to politicize this. But second, I would say, it doesn't matter whether we disagree. We are neighbors.
We're human beings, and we need to unite with one another and see the humanity, and the compassion needs to rise, and the kindness needs to continue to overflow. And guess what? Santiam Canyon's leading the way. You're leading the way, and you've been brought back for a time just as this to bring hope and help, not only of your legal background and your professional background, but your heart. And we need that right now. Thank you for coming back. And before you go back to Vermont in a month or whenever you return, let's have you back in the studio and let's dig in more to some of the Constitution and rule of law, because I can eat that for lunch every single day.
Wonderful.
Does that sound good?
That sounds great.
Let's talk one more time before we wrap up here. How can people get a hold of us on Facebook? What is your Facebook call?
So there's an event page on Facebook called Canyon Rising Lollapalooza. I should mention also that Facebook itself is actually doing a mini documentary on the Canyon Rising efforts. So there will be a professional Facebook presentation on that. I also invite people who have short stories to share to reach out to me, because we want to actually wrap those interviews into our book if people are willing. And I am lisa.barnhart.5 on Facebook.
Excellent. We'll put all that information too on our Facebook page and put it up on our website. Lisa, so good to meet you.
You too, Stacy.
Thank you for sharing your time this morning. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. We're wrapping up another wonderful day. Want to encourage you to come out at noon today. I'd love to see you, hear your story, and certainly we'll eat Thanksgiving dinner together. How's that sound? Have a wonderful day. Over, under, around, or through, no matter what you're facing today, you and I, we're overcomers. Have a great day.